We begin today with kids, lots of kids, and we wonder how many it takes to lose any semblance of order in our lives. Then we look at how many toys the average 5-year-old has. We learn that our most recent favorite self-help guru, well, guess what? We've been saying her name all wrong and backwards. All this on the way to answering the question, is change bad?
Welcome to the Sky Pilot podcast that explores questions of faith, spirituality, and religion. I'm Dan Matthews, and I don't have all the answers, but I do enjoy the questions. Welcome to the podcast where every question is an invitation into a spiritual quest, and you're invited along for the journey.
All right, Sarah and I have 2 children, and they're both grown adults now, so not kids any longer, but still very much part of our lives and us theirs. 2 kids was not always the ultimate goal. We talked about it early on, and I think I said I wanted 6 long before we had any kids. I really just like the idea of having a big family, and I will admit that I never really considered the practical details. It was just kind of a romantic ideal rather than, as I said, a practical plan. Sarah told me she was pregnant with our first child on my birthday. Best birthday present ever. As I said, we don't have 6 kids, we have 2. And we probably would have had more, but there were several miscarriages in between their births. And by the time we had our 2nd, our daughter, we were so overjoyed at her birth, there really wasn't ever a conversation about having more. Now, my younger sister has 4 kids, and I remember the way her life changed as their home went from having 1 to 2 to 3, and ultimately, as I said, 4. She openly said it does get harder with every single kid. It's still wonderful with each birth, but that doesn't mean the demands don't grow. Matter of fact, many parents will proclaim, and we can attest this just with our 2, there's kind of a doubling of work with each child. Part of it is that more children have more needs and more demands, and then basic other household chores begin to slip. So there isn't just twice as much laundry. There's twice as much laundry while you also have twice as many days where the dishes pile up in the sink. So even by the 2nd child, you're seemingly, chronically, woefully behind. Now, my sister, who, as I said, has 4 kids, has friends who have 5 and friends who had 6. And there is amongst them a general consensus that things kind of level off after about 4. Perhaps the level of chaos in your home with 4 or more has just kind of reached a level of equilibrium. Now, to add to all of this, times are different now than when, say, I grew up. I remember reading an article when our son was probably 5 years old, so almost 30 years ago now, and that article said that the average 5-year-old 30 years earlier had had about 30 toys. At the time of this study, when our son was 5 years old, the average 5-year-old had over 300 toys.
I told you, Edna, that's the problem. That's what's wrong with young people these days.
Now, wait, before we get all high and mighty on this kind of issue and look at young people and say, yes, see, they're spoiled, just let's stop for a moment and remember, those 5-year-olds didn't buy themselves 300 toys. We bought them that stuff. So now you have a home with a kid or 2. And hundreds and hundreds and maybe even hundreds of toys, and your life is feeling overwhelmed. Well, there's good news. Into our lives came the world's patron saint of organization, blessing us with a secret of bringing order into our chaotic lives. Her name is, as you probably know, Marie Kondo. Okay, I did a little research because it dawned on me as I was preparing for this podcast. It dawned on me for the first time, you know, it seems unlikely that a Japanese woman has Marie as a first name. I mean, she can be named anything she wants, but is it really Marie Kondo? No, it's not. Actually, it isn't even the correct order for her name. Her real name in Japanese, and obviously I will get the pronunciation wrong, but is Kondo Mariko. K Kondo Mariko is her real name. Known in the West, obviously by her westernized version of her name, Marie Kondo, she came along as the patron saint leading people through a quasi-spiritual process in which they ridded themselves of many of their things that they owned that had become a burden to their lives rather than a helpful addition. I say quasi-spiritual because it was partly inspired by some principles she learned while working in a Shinto shrine. If you know anything about her, then you know the way she helped people differentiate between things to shed and things to keep was one simple question. Does it give you joy? Does it spark joy in your life? Now, perhaps you are a person who tends to hang on to things. Say, for example, there are multiple shirts in your closet that you never wear. 2 years have gone by, and some of those shirts you've never reached for. You've never touched them. Obviously, they don't spark joy for you. Just let them go. Now, I'm speaking hypothetically, of course. There's no such shirts in my closet. Really. I swear. Get out of there. Don't go near my closet. Stop it. Recently, in 2021, Kondo and her husband had their third child. And even more recently, she published her latest book entitled How to Organize Your Space and Achieve Your Ideal Life. Now, you can imagine she has sparked a bit of controversy in the past. She was either disliked by some people for suggesting that they get rid of stuff that they didn't want to get rid of, or others who felt that she held up an impossible and unachievable idea. But this most recent book is by far the most controversial yet. In this book, she seems to acknowledge that her previous way of approaching life was not sustainable nor healthy, and she realized that once her third child was born. She now admits that she still seeks order in her life, but she's more focused on balance and inner well-being than decluttering her stuff. Now, this new viewpoint has set off a firestorm of angry responses. People are upset. They feel she misled them. She's now proven that her previous way was a sham and had no truth in it, they feel like. They feel the fact that she has changed proves she's either a liar now or she was a liar then. Actress Sarah Polley has demanded an apology. She wrote on her Twitter account, "She admits she has kind of given up on tidying up after three kids. Where is the official apology to those of us she influenced to make our clothes into little envelopes while we had three kids?" Others are angry because they never believed in the things she taught, and now they feel confirmed in calling her out as a fraud to begin with. One snarky person wrote on his Twitter feed, "If her kids aren't sparking joy, she should get rid of them." All of this is interesting to me because it speaks of a societal trend that permeates our world, and I think it's a problem. In the world of politics, you know what we call someone who changes his mind? We say he waffles. A good candidate for public office should have opinions and convictions that never change, or so our society seems to believe. Now, I agree that there are times when politicians seem to agree with whomever they are in the room with, but there are other times when people grow, learn, change their opinion, and that isn't a bad thing. It is good. I just read an article this morning about how Jimmy Carter grew and changed from a member of the local school board in the small town in which he lived, someone who supported segregationist policies, to a vocal supporter of civil rights later on in his political career. Is that bad? Is that waffling? Or is that something we call growth? Do we need to see Marie Kondo's latest book as a sign that she was always wrong and can't be trusted? Or can we allow a place in which we give her points for taking life experience into account and learning to change? Now, why does this even matter? Well, in the end, because it is a profoundly spiritual question. Now, within the world of Christianity, there's a certain amount of change that is acceptable, even celebrated. In many churches, they love the idea of a reformed and repentant sinner. But once you have repented and reformed in some churches, it's time to get on board, espouse the church platform, and never, never change again. In other churches, the ones to which I'm drawn, there's a willingness to embrace the questions of our spiritual journeys. Christian transformation is not a single stop during life, but it's a process of continual questioning, reflection, change, and growth. It is the reason many churches observe Lent. Lent, at its best, is a time in which you challenge yourself to live differently, to see things differently, to change in response to these new experiences. Now, some of us will say, yes, that's the problem with the conservative wing of the church. They are not willing to question. They aren't willing to embrace change. But in my experience in the church, the liberal wing struggles with much the same thing frequently. In progressive Christianity, we frequently assume that God loves everyone equally is synonymous with we're all fine just as we are. If God loves us now, then no change is necessary on anyone's part. And yet, you know who was in favor of personal change, by the way? Jesus. Let's look at a couple of examples from Matthew, the 5th chapter. Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you're angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment." Wow, that sounds like a pretty profound change of understanding is expected on our part. He then said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Jesus is so much on the side of change that he gets a little graphic in his imagery supporting the necessity of change. He said, "If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away." Now, I think it's clear here that first of all, Jesus is using a metaphor and a little hyperbole as well. He doesn't expect us to be ripping off our body parts, but what he does mean is he expects us to examine ourselves and then reflect on what we discover. God loves you so much that you are invited by your Creator to be part of this grand adventure called life, an adventure in which you are invited to be curious, to ask questions, to wrestle with the answers, and in the end, to take all of this into account as you change. As you change to make yourself a better person. And as you change to make the world a better place. That's all for today. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you get notified of future episodes. Also, you can find me on Facebook and YouTube. Just search for Sky Pilot Faith Quest. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, my email address is dan@skypilot.zone. And as always, I would love to hear from you. On your spiritual journey, may you ask questions, seek answers, and boldly go wherever the quest takes you. Thanks for listening to Sky Pilot Faith Quest. I invite you to send me a question or leave a review. And remember, the sign of a strong faith, solid religion, or healthy spiritual journey is not certainty, but that you keep asking questions.